Okay, good morning. The topic for today is the fast of Asar B'Teves. As we know, Asar B'Teves will be coming up this Thursday. We hope, we still have time, you know, that still have time for it to be transformed into a Yom Tov, as the Pasuk in Zechariah promises of, that when Moshiach comes, the Tanesim, the four fasts that we observe during the course of the year, to mark the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, from Gedalia, Asar B'Teves, Shavasta, B'Tamas, and Tisha B'Av, will all be transformed, will Beis Yisrael, L'Sofen, L'Simcha, that will be transformed into days of happiness and joy for the Jewish people when Moshiach comes. So, you know, we still have time between now and Thursday. We hope that's going to happen. In case it doesn't happen, so we'll talk a little bit about the fast, the causes for the fast day, and we'll try to derive certain lessons from Asar B'Teves that are relevant even when it's not actually Asar B'Teves. As we mentioned a few moments ago, the four fast days which we observe throughout the year to commemorate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, again from Gedalia, Asar B'Teves, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and Tisha B'Av, are all mentioned actually in the Tanakh itself. There's a pasuk in the book of Zechariah that talks about the fast days that are observed in various, the four fast days observed in those various months during the course of the year. Tzom HaRevi'i, the fast of the fourth month. Tzom HaChamishi, the fast of the fifth month. Tzom HaShvi'i, the fast of the seventh month. And Tzom HaAsiri, the fast of the tenth month. If you calculate the months beginning with Nisan, the 4th, 5th, 7th, and 10th months are Tammuz, Av, Tishrei, and Teves, again, referring to those four Tanesim, those four fast days which we observe during the course of the year. It's obvious from the Pasuk in Zechariah that those fast days were instituted already in the time of the Nevi'im, immediately after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and as such, they're really very ancient, you know, in terms of our observance of those fast days. I'm going to talk a little bit about Asar B'Teves through the prism of one of the poems that are recited in Slichos on Thursday. I realize most of the people in the room don't typically say Slichos on a fast day. They usually said, they're typically said in Shul, you know, as part of the Tefillah B'Tzibur. So again, I realize it's something that many of us here in the room are not personally familiar with, but I do want to quote a couple of lines of one of the poems that we're going to be saying in Shul as part of the Slichos, because I think this particular poem actually spells out a lot of what Asar B'Teves is all about and gives us some insight, you know, that can be helpful, not only for observance of Asar B'Teves, but some insight in general. Ostensibly, the reason that we commemorate Asar B'Teves is because, as the Pesukim in Yecheskel tell us, Asar B'Teves was the day on which Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, began his siege around Yerushalayim. He besieged Yerushalayim for 2.5 years. On the 9th of Tammuz, 2.5 years later, the Babylonians broke through the wall. That wasn't a misstatement on my part. We know that the 17th of Tammuz is associated with breaking the wall, but it's important to realize that the wall was broken through on the 17th of Tammuz by the Romans the second time around. The first time around, although the Babylonians, like the Romans, destroyed the Beis HaMikdash on the 9th of Av, but the day on which they broke through the wall is a little bit different. It was the 9th of Tammuz. And, you know, during the period after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, they didn't fast on the 17th of Tammuz, they fasted on the 9th of Tammuz. And once the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they said, well, we're going to have two fasts, the 9th of Tammuz and the 17th of Tammuz. Let's forget about the 9th of Tammuz and just stick with the 17th of Tammuz, which is when the wall was broken through the second time. If you think about it, if we would have stuck with the 9th of Tammuz, we wouldn't have 3 weeks, we would have 4 weeks. So it's just something to think about. But again, originally the Babylonians broke through the wall on the 9th of Tammuz, and originally that was the fast day that was observed during the month of Tammuz. And as Munzukhariya talks about the Tzom HaRevi, the fast of the fourth month, the fast of Tammuz, he's talking about something which was observed at that time on the ninth. However, the Asar of the Teves, the tenth of Teves, goes back to what happened in the time of the Babylonian siege of Yerushalayim, and it was that day on which the siege began. However, as we're going to see in just a moment, that's just the tip of the iceberg, as it were, in terms of the calamities that befell the Jewish people during the month of Teves. One of the phrases in the poem we're about to see, the poem starts off with the words, Eskira Matso Kasher Kira Ani, I will remember all of the times of distress that befell me. Towards the end of this poem, the author of the poem writes, Yerach Teves Ma'od Lokisi Bo. The month of Teves is the month in which I was stricken many, many times. A lot of tzaras befell the Jewish people during the month of Teves. The poem goes on to list four dates of calamity that are associated with the month of Teves and that happened, you know, on days in the month of Teves that are really contiguous with one another. On the eighth of Teves, Chazal tell us, darkness descended upon the world in a metaphoric sense, because it was on that day that the Torah was translated into Greek. What's the story? So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Megillah that Talmai HaMelech, King Talmai, who was one of the kings of Egypt, when Egypt was a Hellenistic country, you know, Egypt was at that time had a Greek culture, it wasn't an Egyptian culture. So the King Talmai was very interested in having the Torah translated into Greek. So what did he do? He commissioned 70 Talmidei Chachamim, 70 scholars, to come down to his palace. He put them each in separate cubicles, and he said, here's a copy of the Chumash, I want you to translate it into Greek. Miraculously, says the Gemara, all 70 Talmidei Chachamim translated the Torah identically into Greek, exactly the same. And what was even more striking is that all of them made slight changes in the translation to make it to avoid any misunderstandings that might arise from an exact translation. You say, what misunderstandings might arise from an exact translation? So for instance, in the very beginning of Bereishis, when God creates man, the Pasuk in Chumash says, Vayomer Elokim, Na'ase Adam, V'shalmeinu Kidmuseinu. Let us make man in our image. Now, again, if you read that, especially if one were to be an idol worshiper, you would say, oh, the Jews also believe in multiple gods. Let us make man in our image. Sounds like there are multiple powers that are responsible for making man. Hey, the Jews are not so different than us. You know, we believe in many gods, they believe in many gods. So all of the Talmidei Chachamim, all of these scholars on their own, changed the first person plural to the first person singular. Vayomer Elokim, Hashem said, E'eseh Adam, Tzalmi Kidmusi, let me make man in my image. Not let us make God make man in our image, let me make man in my image. And they all, you know, miraculously they all thought of that, they all made that change, and again a number of other changes in the translation of the Chumash, all of which were subtle, but, you know, avoided someone who was an idolater reading the Chumash and coming to a mistaken conclusion about what it is that the Jews actually believe in. So, Sei Chazal, the day on which the Torah was translated into Greek, was the day on which darkness descended upon the world. And really, we should be fasting on the 8th of Teves, the day on which this happened, except that the 8th of Teves is so close to the 10th of Teves, it's just not practical to ask people to fast, you know, 2 days apart from one another. So we kind of fast on the 10th of Teves, but we have in mind on the 10th of Teves that 2 days earlier, the 8th of Teves, wasn't such a wonderful day either.
Now you ask, what's so terrible about translating the Torah into Greek? I mean, here I am, giving the shiur, holding an old school shiur. I mean, it's not in Greek, but, you know, it's translated. The truth is, if we didn't have translations into English and Russian and French and other languages today, there'd be a lot of Jews out there who would be very ignorant of Torah. I mean, the revolution which has been wrought by the translations of so many Torah texts into English and other languages has opened up the doors of Torah to so many people. So what's so terrible if the Jews get together and they translate the Torah into Greek? What's so terrible? So there are two aspects to that event which so bothered Chazal. First of all, it opened up a knowledge of Torah to the non-Jewish world in a way in which Chazal were afraid that that knowledge would be used against us. Truth is, even today, with all of the translations of Tanakh and the Gemara and all these other things that are out there, there are plenty of anti-Semites who will quote lines from a translated Gemara or the like and misuse them to say terrible things about Jews and Judaism. Right? It's a phenomenon which is alive today. I mean, again, I'm not going to mention any particular websites, but if one is interested, you know, you can certainly look around on the internet, and you can find all kinds of, you know, anti-Semitic websites and the like, where they base their anti-Semitism on this passage from the Talmud. It shows us that the Jews are no good. They believe in this, they believe in that. You know, once you translate Torah into any other language, it opens up the, you know, it opens up the doors of Torah to many who didn't understand it before. It also opens up the door to anti-Semitism that didn't exist before. Particularly in the environment of the Hellenistic world, where, you know, not everybody was so enthusiastic about the Jews and their way of life. The Rabbanim were very afraid that the Torah being translated into foreign languages would lead to a degree of anti-Semitism. Secondly, besides leading to anti-Semitism, translating the Torah into other languages leads to a degree of assimilation. On the one hand, it's wonderful that Jews can open up a Chumash in English and read that and be inspired by that. On the other hand, it drops the bar and it gives less of an incentive for people to learn the original Hebrew to be able to read the text in the proper way. And if you read a text in translation, it's never quite the same. There's a quote from the famous Jewish poet Chaim Nachman Bialik. He said, reading something in translation is a little like kissing the bride through the veil. It's close, you know, but it's not exactly the real thing. Meaning, you know, you can never really, really, really understand what the Chumash is saying, what the Gemara is saying, you know, whatever text one is reading, you can never really understand what it's saying if you read it in translation. It's well known that the Jews of Egypt at that time were incredibly assimilated, and many of them really couldn't read Hebrew at all. And, you know, eventually that Jewish community in Alexandria really kind of petered out, you know, because they assimilated into the Hellenistic population around them. The Torah being translated into Greek was just one more nail in the coffin, in a sense, because it meant that, okay, now even the Jews in Egypt don't have to know how to read Hebrew and understand, you know, the Chumash and, the, you know, all of the other texts properly. And it's one step further towards assimilating entirely into the host culture, which is ultimately what happened. So that's the eighth of Teves. The ninth of Teves, we're told in this poem, wasn't so great either. Zo amti b'sishabo b'chlimo v'cheta, I was reproached on the ninth day with embarrassment. Chosach me'olai me'il hod v'cheta, the coat of glory was taken, and my the hat of glory was taken away from me. The one who gave words of beauty was ripped away from me. Who Ezra Hasofe? That is to say, Ezra, the scribe, died on the ninth of Teves. And we're told, although it's not mentioned in the poem, that Ezra's comrade in arms, Nehemiah ben Chachalia, also passed away on the 9th of Tevis. So the 9th of Tevis is also a terrible, terrible day for Klal Yisrael. Really, we should be fasting. But again, what are you going to do? We're going to fast on the 9th of Tevis and then fast on the 10th of Tevis? That's not going to work so well. Right? So, okay, we kind of put aside the 9th of Tevis, but we fast on the 10th of Tevis and have in mind the calamity of the passing of Ezra and Nehemiah. The Sefer Eitz Yosef, which is a commentary on the Siddur, it's actually written a little over 100 years ago by a resident of Bialystok. I don't know if he was a member here in the shul. I think he was back in Bialystok. But this commentary, the Eitz Yosef, asked the question, okay, look, we're clearly upset that Ezra passed away. We're upset that Nehemiah passed away. But we don't make a fast day every time a Gadol B'Yisrael passes away, even a very great Gadol B'Yisrael. I mean, again, the Chazal say that Ezra HaSofer would have been, you know, fit to receive the Torah instead of Moshe Rabbeinu, except that Moshe Rabbeinu showed up in history first. Right? So really, Ezra HaSofer had all the qualifications to be able to be the Mekabel HaTorah, you know, the one who would receive the Torah. Okay, really, a Gadol B'Yisrael, we get it, fine. But we don't fast on the yard side of Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, if you're part of the Chevra Kadisha, in certain, you know, in certain areas, the Chevra Kadisha fasts on the 7th of Adar, the yard side of Moshe Rabbeinu. But, okay, but the rest of us don't, right? So if we're not fasting on the yard side of Moshe Rabbeinu, why should we have fasted on the yard side of Ezra HaSofer? Why does that make sense? It also suggests that the death of Ezra HaSofer was significant not just in its own right, but in a sense it was the end of an era. Chazal tell us that Ezra was the last of the Nevi'im, was the last of the prophets. They tell us that the Navi, who is considered to be the last of the prophets, whose name is Holdos in Tanakh, as Malachi, his name wasn't really Malachi. Right, Malachi means my messenger, my agent. I have to know one person who's named Malachi. That's it. But otherwise, you know, it's not really a name that people have. And Chazal say, yeah, Malachi is not really a name. Malachi means my messenger, my agent. Who was Malachi? Say Chazal, Malachi was Ezra HaSofer. It was really Ezra. So in other words, Ezra was the last of the Nevi'im. Malachi was the last of the Nevi'im. He finishes his Nevu'ah. He says, Zichru Taras Moshe Avdi. You know, Nevu'ah is going to end. Remember the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Keep it throughout the generations. And boom, that's the end of Nevu'ah. So when Ezra passed away, a whole era in Jewish history came to an end. An era during which the Ribbono Shel Olam communicated his will to Nevi'im. Wow. That really is significant. That really is the end of a whole epoch of Jewish history. So as such, you know, says the Eitz Yosef, that's why we would think to fast on the 9th of Tevis, were it not for the fact that the 9th of Tevis is so close to the 10th of Tevis that it's just not practical to have people fasting 2 days in a row. The 10th of Tevis, we know, is the day on which we actually fast. But there's more to the 10th of Tevis, explains the poem, than quote-unquote simply the fact that the siege of Yerushalayim began on that day. One looks in the book of Yechezkel, it describes the following. Yechezkel was a Navi who lived in Bavel, and he was in Bavel at the time of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar had come to Yerushalayim 11 years before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, and he gathered up many of the cream of the crop of the people of Yerushalayim, and he sent them off to Bavel in a first wave of exile. It's called the Golus HaFaras HaMasker, the first wave of exile that was sent by Nebuchadnezzar into Bavel. So there was this whole Jewish community living in Bavel for 11 years before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. And the truth is, they, at a certain point, they probably actually became the majority of Jews, because, you know, there were very few Jews left in Yerushalayim by the time that the Churban actually took place. So Yechezkel was among those Jews who was exiled to Babel 11 years before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, and all of Yechezkel's prophecies took place in Babel. On the 10th of Tevesh, when the siege began, God appeared to Yechezkel HaNavi in Babel, and he told him, Sov l'cha es etzem hayom hazeh. I want you to write down in a book that today is the day of the 10th of Tevesh, and on today, God came to me, Yechezkel, and told me that the siege around Yerushalayim was beginning. And I want you to show that to the people in Babel. Again, this is the days before instant communication, right? In other words, whatever happens in Eretz Yisrael, the news is not going to reach Babel for a long time thereafter. So you'll be able to show the Jews that God already told you now that the siege is beginning around Yerushalayim, and when the word confirming that comes to them, whenever it comes, weeks later, months later, that, yeah, you know, weeks ago, months ago, on the 10th of Tevis, Nebuchadnezzar began his siege around Yerushalayim, so now the Jews are going to look at you, Yechezkel, and say, oh, I guess you really are a Navi. Right? I guess you're on the money. You're really predicting everything properly. You know, up to that point, they had their doubts whether everything that Yechezkel was telling them was really true, was really going to come true. Yechezkel's telling them that Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Ah, come on, Beis HaMikdash is not going to be destroyed. What do you know? You know, you think you're a Navi or something. So here, you're going to go to the people, and you'll tell them, God came to me on the 10th of Tevis, and he told me this is the date on which the siege is beginning. And when it's confirmed a few weeks or months later, they're going to say, well, okay, I guess you really are a Navi. I guess you really are getting communications from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the 10th of Tevis was an important date in order to establish the authenticity of the Nebuah of Yechezkel. For that reason, there's a very fascinating sort of theoretical halacha, which is stated by Rav David Avudraham. Zadar Avudraham, we've encountered him before, he was a Spanish commentator on the Siddur who lived in the 1300s. So Zadar Avudraham writes, in theory, if Asara B'Tevesh were to come out on Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos. Now, this is all theoretical, because the way our calendar is set up, Asara B'Tevesh can never come out on Shabbos. The Sefer of Zavid Abu Dharam, you know, once upon a time, before there was a fixed calendar, when they determined the calendar based on the sighting of the moon, so, you know, Asar B'Tevis could come out on any day of the week, could come out on Shabbos also. Now, we know most of the time when a fast day comes out on Shabbos, with the exception of Yom Kippur, we push off the fast day. Right? In the case of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, in the case of Tzom Gedalia, the case of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and the case of Tisha B'Av, when they come out on Shabbos, we push them forward a day till Sunday. If Tainus Esther, if your Gimel Adar comes out on Shabbos, we push it back to Thursday. However, the Asar B'Tevis, were it to come out on Shabbos, we would actually fast on that day, says the Avudraham. So why? So he says, because we see with Asar B'Tevis, more so than any of the other fast days, the date of the 10th of Tevis was supremely important. Because that date, conveying that date to the people, it was the beginning of the end, and it was that date that proved the truth of the Nebuah of Yechezkel. You know, this is the date, and the term that the Navi uses in describing how Yechezkel would write down that date, he says, write down Etzem Hayom Hazeh, the essence of this day. Write down that on this very day, Nebuchadnezzar has begun his siege. Says the Avudraham, if you look at the Pesukim and Chumash that describe Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur is also described as a day that has to be observed, the Etzem Hayom Hazeh, on this very day of the 10th of Tishrei, come what may. Right? And that's how we know that you keep Yom Kippur, even if it comes out on Shabbos. Right? On the essence of this day, on this very day, come what may, we observe Yom Kippur. Okay, since the Etzem Hayom Hazeh with regards to Asar B'Tevis, so we should keep it on that day in any case. You know, even if it comes out on Shabbos. On a certain level, this is less theoretical than it seems. Again, Asar B'Tevis can never come out on Shabbos, but it can come out on Friday. It comes out every couple of years on Friday. And then we have the unusual circumstance where we actually fast an hour or so into Shabbos. Because Shabbos begins
at sunset, the fast isn't over until the stars come out. So in other words, when Asar B'Teves is on Friday, we go into Shabbos hungry, having not broken the fast, right? And we're not allowed to break the fast until we make Kiddush after the stars come out. Right? So again, there's about an hour or so after Shabbos comes in that we're still in the fast and we haven't broken it yet. How can you fast on Shabbos even for an hour? It may go back to this idea from Rav David Avudraham. Well, you know, Asar B'Teves, we would fast even on Shabbos. So if we would fast even if it came out on Shabbos, we can certainly fast when it comes out on Friday, you know, for that, you know, little window of time that, you know, during the Be'ah Shmashos, the twilight period from Friday going into Shabbos, that we maintain the fast during that period of time as well. So in any case, that's the tenth of Teves. And there's one more date during Teves, which is also a calamity. And here we're told that the Vo'elai Apolit Lomar Hukis Soha'ir. The Pesukim also in Yechezkel tell us that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the 9th of Av, it took a few months for the news to reach the Jewish community in Babylonia. It took 5 months, actually. Right? It's hard to imagine why it took such a long time, but it took that amount of time. It wasn't until the 5th of Teves that a poet, a refugee from Yerushalayim, showed up in Bavel, and he broke the sad news to the Jewish community in Bavel. The city has been taken by the Babylonians, and the Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed. So again, although the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed on the 9th of Av, the news only reached Bavel on the 5th of Teves. By the way, the Pesukim Yechezkel tell us that when that happened, that actually also, as tragic as it was, it also gave, it bolstered the reputation of Yechezkel, because Yechezkel had been telling the Jewish people in Babylon for years, Beit HaMikdash has got to be destroyed, it's got to be destroyed, it's got to be destroyed, it's got to be destroyed, and they laughed him off. And now, unfortunately, you know, they turned around. They said, I guess you were right, I guess you really are a Navi, I guess, you know, you're really on the money in terms of these predictions. But that was the fourth thing that happened in Teves. Again, the 5th of the month, the 8th of the month, the 9th of the month, the 10th of the month, in the words of the Piyut, Kasti al arba atam, I exclaimed concerning these four things, Lu chetz b'libi yorisi, I wish that I had shot an arrow into my own heart. I feel so devastated by all four of these things, all four of these things happening in such, you know, again, not really in rapid succession, but from the point of view of the calendar, you know, they seem to be in rapid succession. The 5th, the 8th, the 9th, the 10th, you know, four days right in the beginning of Teves, each one associated with a terrible calamity. We understand what he says, Yerach Teves Ma'od Loki Sivo. Wow, it's not just about Asara of the Teves, it's not just about the 10th, the whole month of Teves is a month in which I'm getting clapped, I'm getting hit over the head time and time again with all four of these terrible calamities. The question I want to explore for a couple of moments is, why is Teves this month which has so much calamity associated with it? Again, the poem seems to bring out, it's not just happenstance that a bunch of bad things happen in the beginning of Teves. It seems like there's something almost, if you will, jinxed about the month of Teves. What's so terrible about Teves? So let's... What's that? So the Meraglim, they left the very end of Sivan, they came back Tisha B'Av. Right? So it's not really it's not really associated with the Meraglim so much. But let me amplify the question a little bit more. You would think, in a vacuum, that Teves should be one of the happiest months of the Jewish year. Let's think about it for a moment. How does Teves start off? First day of Teves is Hanukkah. That's pretty nice. In fact, Teves is the only Rosh Chodesh where we say complete Hallel. Every other Rosh Chodesh, we say Chatzi Hallel. And again, as we pointed out before, Chatzi Hallel isn't really an obligation
it's a minog, it's a custom that was adopted by the entire Jewish people. But the challah that we say on Rosh Chodesh Teves is a real bona fide challah. It's challah shalei. It's a portion of Hanukkah, and it's a bona fide obligation. In other words, again, most of the time the challah of Rosh Chodesh is a custom. On Teves, it's a bona fide obligation, right? And the days leading up to Rosh Chodesh Teves, you know, those who observe the practice of Yom Kippur Kapan, of fasting before Rosh Chodesh, don't do so before Teves. Why? Because you can't. When are you going to fast? Hanukkah. You're not allowed to fast on Hanukkah. So in other words, you know, the whole idea of fast going up to Rosh Chodesh disappears, because the days leading up to Rosh Chodesh Teves are also joyous days. They're days of Hanukkah. Let's take it one step further. What word is lurking in the word Teves? Drop the stuff. Tes Zeis. Tov. Teves is Tov. It's good. Right? A month that's called good. How bad could that be? Right? It's a good month. Right? A good Chodesh. Right? That's what it is. The very name means good. So you have a month that starts off with a full Hallel. You have a month whose very name means Tov. So how could that month, of all months, be transformed into a month during which there are four tragedies in rapid succession, which we're commemorating at the beginning of the month? The truth is, I think the author of the poem is sensitive to this idea, namely, that there's something very odd about these tragedies befalling us, Davka, in the month of Teves. He goes on to write, V'nishtanu alai, during the month of Teves, Nishtanu alai sidre nisivo. The normal course of Teves was transformed because of these tragedies. What do you mean by that? I think what he means is that the normal course of Teves should be that this is a month of rejoicing and happiness. It's a month of Tov. And Nishtanu alai sidre nisivo. The normal course of things was overturned in Teves, and a month that should have been a beautiful month, all of a sudden becomes a very difficult month filled with tragedy. Again, how do we understand that? I think the idea here is really an idea that goes beyond the month of Teves and applies to life in general. The holier something is, the more precious something is, the greater the potential for messing it up and bringing it to a bad place actually is as well. When something has tremendous potential for good implicit in it, you have to watch it very carefully. You have to guard it very carefully. Because if you're not careful with it, it doesn't just slide from being very good to being neutral. It slides from being very good to being very bad. Just to take an example of this, an example I think we can all relate to. Shabbos is supposed to be a day of rest and spiritual bliss. If you're not careful with treating Shabbos properly, people can tell you Shabbos sometimes can be one of the most stressful days during the course of the week. Right? Go into many Jewish homes, you know, an hour before Shabbos begins, a half an hour before Shabbos begins. You know, who's in the shower? Get out of the shower. You know, or who's minding the blech? You know, who's on top of the cooking? What do you mean if you forgot to turn, you know, to fix the lights? You know, so this day, which is supposed to be a day of menucha, if you're not careful, can very quickly slide into a day of tremendous stress. And it doesn't just fly to neutral. It can be a negative experience for people. And if you think about that, all of the great positive experiences that we have in life, if you're not careful with them, they can very quickly become not just neutral experiences, but negative experiences. People are making a simcha. That's wonderful. Right? But now we have to sit down and plan the tables and the seating. And this one doesn't talk to this one, and this one won't sit with this one, and this one doesn't even want to be in the same room with the other one. and, you know, how come you put me over here? How come you put me over there? And how come, you know, we ordered the chicken and beef, and you gave me this, and you gave me that? You know, I mean, you can take something which is a simcha, and if you're not careful with it, the simcha itself can become an opportunity for agmas nefesh, for tremendous, tremendous agony.
You know, you don't make Shabbos enriching, you know, for sure, for healing, whatever, for sleep or whatever. It could be like, you know, you can make it like very boring and very blah.
Right, and it's more than that. It doesn't just go to neutral. Okay, so it's another day. When people don't take care of Shabbos properly, it can become terrible. Right, it's onerous for them. It's depressing for them. It's negative for them. Right? Why is that? How could you have that experience? It's precisely because these times are so holy and so special that we have to watch over them very carefully. Because if you don't watch over a period of simcha and menucha and kedusha, it can go haywire, and it can become not just okay. It didn't live up to expectations. It can become terrible. Right? Because it has so much potential, you know, the potential can be used for good, but the potential can be used for bad in a very terrible way as well. That's the month of Teves. Teves starts off with such potential. It starts off with a full Hallel. It starts off with a Yom Tov of Hanukkah. It starts off Tov. Teves is Tov. But if we don't pay attention to that, if we don't watch it properly, it can boomerang, and we can have four tragedies right at the beginning of Teves, because when you don't watch over something which is positive, it can very quickly slip into something which is negative. So what's the solution? So the Pius a little bit tells us the solution. Sorarati poshati. I deviated and I sinned. And I guess that's why I have these terrible things happening to me in Teves. Yigala li tuvo. The three words yigala li tuvo are translated by Artsko as, may he, meaning God, reveal to me his goodness. As I messed up, halavai Hashem should show me his goodness. I think so you can translate these words a little bit differently. Again, we know in Hebrew there's no word for it. It is either he or she. Yigala li tuvo. Let God reveal to me its goodness. It referring to the month. Ribbono Shel Olam, we know that deep down in Teves is goodness. It's all about Tov. It's all about a month that starts off with a Hallel Shalom, with a beautiful recitation of Hallel. Ribbono Shel Olam, we know it's there. Help us peel away these layers of tragedy so that we can uncover the Tov, the goodness, which is implicit in the holiday, in the month of Teves. We know it's there. Just give us the wisdom and the insight to be able to peel away the outer layers and to be able to expose the real goodness which is implicit in Teves. How does this apply on a practical level to make, you know, to kind of take the stress out of Shabbos, to take the stress out of simcha planning and all these kind of things? I don't know that there's a simple pat answer, you know, that's going to make everything non-stressful in life. But the first step is to be aware. The first step is to be aware that when you have a time of tremendous joy and kedusha, and you know, a wonderful time, that there's so much potential for that to go haywire, and to just be, you know, to be aware of that, to be focused on that, and to take steps towards, you know, to think out how we can make this time less stressful, right? Maybe in the case of Shabbos, it means, you know, trying to make preparations earlier. You know, it's always a bad idea to try to make Shabbos the last 45 minutes, you know, right before Shabbos is going to come in. It doesn't mean that there aren't people who don't do it, but, you know, it doesn't help alleviate the stress factor. Maybe in terms of making Shabbos more meaningful, so, you know, we should think ahead in terms of what we can talk about at the Seudos. You know, if you just kind of plop down and, you know, say things like, wow, what a week, glad it's over. You know, can we rush through the courses so we can get to bed already? You know, so, okay, we're not going to maximize what we can get out of the Shabbos food, though. if we go in with that kind of attitude. If we know that there's tremendous tov there and we're just trying to mine it and to make sure that it doesn't slip away into something which is going to be negative, you know, so we daven for siyata d'shmaya that the Ribbono Shel Olam should help us in that regard, you know, to preserve the tov of the good things in our lives and not allow them to slip into something which is negative. However, that we should still be zocha this Thursday, that Basar B'Teva should be a day of rejoicing. Again, that's another thing. When Mashiach comes, says Hashem, Basar B'Teva is not simply going to be another day. It's going to be a yontif. It's going to be a holiday. So it really will bring out the tov, the goodness that's in Teves. However, we should be zocha to that day very, very soon. Until that day, we should be zocha that the moments of tov in our own lives, we should be able to realize and recognize and not allow them to slip into something which is going to be negative. Okay? Wish everybody a good day, and we'll see everybody God willing next week.